This is Don Reed, police recorder.
And this is Dr. Fiss, police psychologist.
And we're talking from the tape room at headquarters. As you know, each evening at this time, we listen and discuss an actual case that was recorded in the field just as it happened. Now I have the tape sorted out. Our police psychologist sitting here will listen with us, and then we'll see if we can talk him into an opinion. And we'll put the two together and see if we come up with why. Now, Doctor, the case that I picked out tonight deals with a 14-year-old boy that was arrested for burglary. Now, this has a lot of unusual angles to it. We'll be back in just a moment to tell you all about it. But first, let's listen to Dan Coverley.
You're listening to Police Recorder. As you listen tonight, remember, every voice and sound you hear was recorded just as it happened. Now, let's switch back to the tape room in headquarters with Dr. Fisk, police psychologist, and police recorder, Don Reed.
Doctor, as I told you, this case tonight is a burglary case that has some real unusual angles. Now, let me just sort of fill you in with the details. It started really, a couple of years ago when we arrested this young fellow for burglary, and yet, well, he's only 14 years old today. Now, we got a tip that he was up to some of his old tricks again and pulled a couple of more burglaries. And now, the unusual angle comes in because Sergeant Perkins from the Detective Bureau had been working with the boy, trying to keep him straight. Now, let me show you what it sounded like when we talked with him in the office when we first picked him up. Now, bear in mind, we had known this boy for some time.
Why don't you tell me about it?
I didn't even do it.
Didn't do what?
What they're trying to put on me.
You're cold. You're dead.
What?
We got you right smack between the eyes. No ands, yes, or buts about it. I'm not kidding you.
I know.
Not kidding you one way, shape, or manner, or anything else. You went into the clothing store, you went into the bakery.
How you know?
What do you think he's in jail for?
Well, am I going to stay in jail?
That's right.
Are you going to... Can I go until I go to court? How come? I'm going to go right to juvie, huh?
Remember when I talked to you before?
What'd you say?
I told you about staying out of trouble?
Yeah. I'm learning.
Okay, Doctor, you tell me.
Well, Don, I think we see here a case which comes up only too often with the adolescent boy and also the adolescent girl. We hear this boy, and you notice in his voice the resentful feelings, the rather hopeless tone which he uses. He feels that no one can help him. He feels under tremendous pressure. He doesn't know what is causing it. He just lashes out in a hostile, resentful kind of way without really understanding what lies behind his behavior and really feeling badly about his behavior himself, but not being able to control it. He can't expect much help from his parents. At this time in the adolescent's life, he's looking for a place for himself in the world, and the parent really can't help him. And other people who try to help him become very resentful themselves, and they don't understand why he can't accept their help and be show gratitude, really. Mm-hmm. But the boy can't because not because he doesn't want to, but because of the inner pressures, the emotional disturbance that's going on within himself this time that doesn't allow him to react in what we perceive as a normal and adult way.
One thought keeps entering my mind. Why did this particular boy pick burglary? Now, mind you that we arrested this boy, this was the third or fourth time, but each time was burglary. I wonder why.
Mm-hmm. Well, the choice that the adolescent makes in expressing these emotions, feelings, depends on many things, but I think in this case, perhaps the boy is really looking for something, looking for people to give him something. Mm-hmm. And that these articles which he steals really represent to him more than just the articles themselves, but gifts of love and affection, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you, Doctor, I think we can clarify a lot of things about this young fellow when we listen to his mother and father. Now, I'm going to take you into his home in just a moment, but first, let's go back to the studio and Dan Coverley.
You're listening to Police Recorder. Normally, we would put a one-minute commercial here, but instead, let me put in a word about our show. To add a bit more to the unusual, from time to time, along with our police psychologist, we'll add still another guest, the actual suspect heard on the case. This will bring another first to radio, the first time a criminal will face himself and hear how he reacted at the time of his arrest. This is just one of a series of twists we plan to utilize on Police Recorder. Now, let's switch back to the tape room, where the police psychologist is discussing a burglary case with Don Reed, police recorder.
Let's see, I was telling you, Doctor, about this burglary suspect and his parents. I think you'll be interested to listen, because I took my tape recorder to his home with a couple of detectives. Along about 11 o'clock at night, we walked up and knocked on the door, and here's what happened.
Yes, come right in.
Mother of suspect. Small, petite.
That's my
husband.
Yes, sir. Hello. Detective Manlock. Howdy, do, sir. My name is Southwick.
Howdy, do, sir. Father. House slippers, pipe. Holder.
Oh, Aaron.
Sir.
I've had nothing but trouble with my son. That's what it is.
You got more.
You got a little more, I'm afraid.
At present, Colton City on a burglary charge.
Uh-huh. Yeah, we can't do anything with it. We've given the kid everything that anybody can give, except time. I have no time to give him.
And all my life, I've never seen a boy that ignores gets it from my sister.
Points that the parents brought up here was when the father said he had given this boy everything except time, which of course is exactly what the boy needed. Not at this point, because it's too late for the parents really to be too actively helpful for this boy. But before this, if the boy had, during his earlier childhood, had been able to form a strong bond with the father, could have felt supported by him, then he wouldn't have this feeling of being at loose ends on his own without support at this time, you see.
Well, now, here's one thing. You know, the father referred to, said something about, he addressed a remark to his son, something about being a bum. Could this develop some sort of a complex within the boy?
It certainly would add nothing to his feeling of security. Both the father and the mother at this point, of course, are tremendously upset. We can't point the finger and say they're at fault, but certainly they're not understanding the boy's problems. When the mother says that this boy has been nothing but trouble. Mm-hmm. You see, this is a complete rejection of the child. And when the father tells him to his face he's going to be nothing but a bum, the boy has no support in this kind of relationship with his parents. He feels upset. He feels badgered on all sides anyway. And when he turns to the people who should be most supporting to him in a quiet kind of way, he gets this sort of complete rejection, which only forces him into other ways of expressing these tangled feelings which he has, and trying to seek some satisfaction for the pressures that he feels at this time in his life.
Mm-hmm. This more or less counts then for his attitude in the office with the sergeant there, how defiant that we felt that he sounded. In other words, this probably was one of the contributing factors.
Yeah, this is actually a pose that he has to build up to maintain any kind of self satisfaction, any kind of self of believing in himself. I mean, this is actually a pose. I don't think he really feels this way, but he has to make like he's a big shot, you see.
The defense mechanism of
That's
some
right.
sort.
That's right.
Well, I'll tell you, Doc, you know, I've been in on a lot of cases, and, well, you might say everything from homicide to stealing lemons. But I think the next spot that I'm going to play for you will find just a little bit different from anything that you've ever encountered before. As I mentioned before, this detective sergeant, you know, had been working with a boy. In fact, he'd even gone further than that. He'd taken this youngster into his own home and tried to sort of interest him in sports, give him a hobby. As a matter of fact, I remember one day I was talking to the sergeant's mother on the telephone, and we were discussing this boy, and she said, "Oh, yes, I remember him. I baked cookies for him." So you can really see that it was a real disappointment when we had to arrest this young fellow again. Now, let me play that part of the tape that was recorded when he and the sergeant were in the detective bureau alone talking.
What'd you do it for?
I thought this time that you were going to straighten out.
Yeah,
what did.
You said you need money, but you didn't take money. Did you take any money out of the bakery?
No, I was hungry. I didn't have no money.
What did you do?
I don't know.
You knew what it meant. Can't say that you haven't had a break in the past.
You think so?
This is one time that I hate my job.
Yeah.
It's the time you don't get paid enough. You never will. I've seen you around town a long time, watched you grow up. But you got all the makings in the world of being a good guy. Sorry that I couldn't give you more time. Work with you longer and harder. There's only so many hours in a day and so many days in a week. There's so many kids to work with.
You're the only person that ever tried to help me. God, it can't be what you mean this book.
Put it up. Some bigger and tougher guys than you cried out. I'm going to be ashamed of.
Let me happen.
Still got a chance. You're not 18 yet. I think you let me down in this deal. Maybe it's my fault. Maybe it's your fault. I don't know. But I still think you can do it.
Straighten up. Now you want to take him back? I'm going to go with him, son.
Hold the best one, fellas.
Okay.
Well tried, Perk. You can't always win.
In this case, I'm a bad loser.
What are you going to do with him?
Book him for burglary.
But, Doctor, there's a 14-year-old boy. Right smack in the middle of the crossroads. Where does he go from there?
Well, I think that was most certainly a very moving scene, Don. I think we get a bit of a look underneath this boy's behavior, what you see on the surface. And we see in this scene here, and in this boy, the anxiety, the remorse, the loneliness which this boy feels, and which are some of the factors that enter into his burglary, his behavior here. I think when he said that, to quote the boy, "You are the only person who ever tried to help me," that we see what this boy really feels toward the world around him, a feeling of not being a part of anything, mm-hmm. of not being supported mm-hmm. by the people around him. Of course, a detective could not be a real substitute for a mother and father. This was something that should have been with the boy when he was much younger than he is now. Mm-hmm. But I think the detective handled it pretty well, in that he not only pointed out to the boy that he must accept some responsibility for his actions, but also that he would still, he still suggested at least that he was interested in the boy, believed in him, and would continue to help him.
Well, do you believe that you can put the blame somewhere? Can you blame it on the parents? Do you blame it on society? Or in your opinion, where would you toss the blame in a case like this?
It's not a question of blame exactly, but if you wanted to say where does responsibility lie, I would certainly say it's in our society and the way our concepts of growth, of what we expect from the adolescent, and the teachings which we give our parents. I mean, these parents were expressing nothing but the things they knew.
Well, you would base it then that the parents themselves are responsible.
No, I wouldn't say that, Don. I would say that the relationship between the boy and the parents is certainly most important. But I wouldn't say that the parents are to blame for what has happened.
You don't even think
because it goes beyond that.
You don't even think they're a contributing factor?
Oh, certainly they're a contributing factor, but it's not a question of blame. The parents are only being what they have to be. By that I mean they're only the product of what they have been taught.
Oh, I see what you mean.
What mm-hmm. the relationship between themselves and their parents mm-hmm. were, you see.
I see. That's what you mean by society.
Yes, and our concept of adolescence, which is, again, a topic for some discussion.
Mm-hmm. Doctor, you know, in just a moment, I want to throw a key question at you, and that is, what would you do if this boy was yours? But, okay, Doctor, here's that key question that I was mumbling about. What would you do if this was your 14-year-old boy?
Well, that's a pretty loaded question, Don, but
I would say it was spiked up a bit.
The first thing I would do would be to show by my actions and behavior rather than words that I was still with the boy, that I was still his father and still believed in him, was not leaving him to his fate, as you might say. But I think this is a time to bring in someone besides a parent. I think a good boys group with a good counselor where the boy may learn to express some of these adolescent needs, this drive, this hostility perhaps, where you can learn to express these things in a little more acceptable way. I mean, some of our hot rod races and some of our police-sponsored shooting matches, this sort of thing drains off these tensions that this boy is expressing in his burglary, partially at least.
Is there any other thing that we would need?
If circumstances are such that the boy can have the help of a trained therapist, of course, this would be of value.
Not only that, it brings some more business to the office.
Now you're being nasty.
But, actually, in other words, what we're really saying, though, is that this boy can be helped.
Oh, yes, yeah. Certainly. I see lots of boys just like this one. Well, in your own work, you see this every day also. Mm-hmm. And the boy does need help. in one way or another. I mean, this too often, this kind of thing will lead to more serious behavior, get the boy into more serious difficulties, and just sort of be a snowballing effect unless it's checked. And this is a point at which the boy can use some real help.
Well, this is it's so very true.
But he can be helped, yes.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, this is so very true because so many of the criminals that we get now that are, say, 19, 20, and 21, I can see them, and I have seen them two or three, mm-hmm. 3 years ago mm-hmm. When I first started with the department, and I can see them. Well, we call them bean bandits then, mm-hmm. and today they're in the big time. In other words, they're mm-hmm. progressing. That's what I meant when I said that this young fellow was at the crossroads. Mm-hmm. And speaking of that, sort of reminds me as to where he is today. This young fellow is still in custody, and whether he gets out or not, and when he gets out, of course, is entirely up to the juvenile authorities. But anyway, I just wanted you here, and I wanted to get your opinions of this young fellow at the crossroads.
You've been listening in the tape room at headquarters to actual recorded police cases, where every voice and every sound is real. Appearing on tonight's broadcast was Dr. Claude Fisk, police psychologist. Police Recorder is produced by Sterling Tracy and Jim Headlock, with technical advice by Sergeant Ron Perkins of the Culver City, California Police Department, W.N. Hildebrand, Chief. This program is discussed from the tape room at headquarters by the official police recorder, Don Reed.